everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Here at WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests that help you lead a more positively minded life. Part of what many of you remark at when listening to my responses to callers is how I can very often pick from something small that someone says something that just seems like you would have never noticed it. You know, you wouldn't have noticed it. Well, after so many years of listening to people and having some special antenna, I kind of pick up on things. But, you know, it dawns on me that many people who have come to see me over the years, they seem to have, at times, have blinders on. Now, what does that mean? It means there are certain things that people do or say that could or could not represent that there is something unusual about the person. Now, so somebody could say something to you that could be very simple and very benign, and it might be more than that. It may indicate something, and you don't know that. You see, when you meet people for the first time, usually there's a desire inside you, as we said in previous programs, to make the connection. So when you have a desire to make the connection, there are things you don't pay attention to because the most important thing is you making the connection. If you want to make the connection because you're lonely, then you listen to people talk to you, and you're hoping they just fit into your availability when you're lonely. But you don't necessarily listen to the stuff they say that kind of indicates they may have a small bent going in a different direction than you like. For example, somebody said to me the other day, somebody made a comment in passing, and somewhere in there I heard an anti-Semitic remark, and it was a professional who I was thinking about working with, and that was all I needed. You know, I heard that, and I had to question it later on, and found out that my suspicion was true, and therefore I chose not to work with this person. So people say things that are questionably right and may mean that they are perfectly normal but unusual people, and that other people are giving you an indication that they are unusual people but maybe not what's called normal. Therefore, what you may be seeing is a sign that the person is not going to be somebody you're going to enjoy being around in the future. How do you learn those things? How do you know those things? What do you see? If you see somebody walking down the street who's angry all the time, you may say to yourself, oh, here's somebody I'm not going to get too close to because this person is angry all the time. If they're barking at everyone who passes by, you say to yourself, well, you know, that person's not fit. Something wrong with them. I'm not going to try to get close to them. I mean, you may choose to try to get close to them if you're in that kind of a mood. But mostly you would say to yourself, that's not for me. I'll stay away from that. That's one thing. If, on the other hand, you're in some foreign country and you just arrived for the first time and you've just gotten a divorce and you're a single woman and some man comes over to you and he says, can I carry your bags, lady? And you look at him and he's a very attractive young man. You may overlook the fact that there are 10 or 12 guys waiting at the airport for everybody who gets off the airplane so they can carry your bags because they're looking to make some money, you know, perhaps even more money. Questions, things that people say to you for the first time. I want you to think about a time that you met somebody and they said something to you that was just quirky, like, I heard some woman say to me the other day, my children won't speak to me. Now, okay. Should we go into that? Does that mean she's crazy? No. But when I heard that, I said, my children won't speak to me. Pretty big deal. In my history, in my experience, when a woman has children who won't speak to me, that means that she is somebody who generally gets very angry at her offspring, and that they have decided that the only way they could deal with her is they feel powerless with her, is they cut her off. Therefore, they won't talk to her anymore. Now, what does that mean? That means that she, a woman who has children who won't talk to her, has anger that's out of control, which may mean to me that she's either got a bipolar condition where she has these rages that come out, or a borderline condition where she has these rages come out, or something like that. So in my mind, automatically, I'm questioning it, but that's my job. That's what I do for a living. So if someone says to me, my children won't speak to me, I don't say, oh, okay, and let it pass. In my mind, in my profession, it's something worthy of question. In your mind, you would say, oh, that's unusual, that's odd. But you may not question it. If you're trying to keep the friend and you don't want to offend them, or if it's your boss's wife or something, you're not going to say, well, why? Because you're afraid you might open a can of worms. Armand DeMille with you with the positive mind. You know, eating disorders, those are real funny ones, right? You see people working out at a gym furiously, thin as a rail, right? 0% fat, right? Muscular kind of a person who's always working out, always, and they do it with a kind of frantic energy, and you look at it, and you say, well, that person just likes to be healthy. Well, you know, sometimes overdoing is a sign that something is going on inside the person. Today, I want to talk to you about some of these real unusual ones. Someone says to you, they hate their bodies. You know, I hate my nose. I mean, I don't really hate my nose. I got a nice nose. But if somebody says, I hate my nose, and I really hate my nose so much, I won't even look in the mirror at my nose. I can't stand my nose. That's called body dysmorphia. Dysmorphia is when the person's concern about some part of their body is such that it goes way beyond reason. But you hear people talking about it. I'm so fat. And that's all they talk about all day long. And they're just like 2 or 3 pounds overweight. So even though it may sound to you like a nice, simple, calm, easy thing, it might just be part of somebody's idiosyncratic behavior. Very often it shows a sign that there's an underlying disturbance. And it's worthy of your attention. Now let's keep in mind evolution. Evolution is where we take the incoherent homogeneity of the world, this kind of evolution. We take something that is there, and we want to change it to somehow create a new thing out of it. So we want to take what is, and we want to create something new. So in order to do that, imagination is a very important part of creating the new. You have to imagine the new to create the new. See? And then comes a phenomenon such as, you know, imagining and just imagining new things. Now, anomalous experiences, which are experiences of what you kind of look at, and you could say to yourself, there are spaceships out there, there are things that are happening, there are spiritual things, anomalous experiences. This kind of thing is a natural part of the evolution of man, trying to imagine, fantasize things outside. So if you imagine, you know, the Twilight Zone, the X-Files became very popular. If you imagine these kind of things, are you saying this? You're very disturbed for imagining beyond the normal limits? No. That's the way we grow. Are you unusual? Yes. But unusual does not necessarily mean crazy. We define an anomalous experience as an uncommon experience, or one, though, although it may be experienced by a substantial number of the population, is believed to deviate from ordinary experience. So let's talk about what happened late last night, one night in Alabama. Late one night in a small Alabama century, Vance Vanders had a run-in with a local witch doctor who wanted a bottle of unpleasant-smelling liquid and wafted a bottle, took this bottle of very unpleasant-smelling liquid in front of his face and told him he was about to die and that no one could save him. Vance Vanders. Now, this is documented as a true story by medical professionals. Back home, Vanders took to his bed and began to deteriorate. Some weeks later, emaciated and near death, he was admitted to a local hospital where doctors were unable to find a cause for his symptoms or slow his decline. Only then did his wife tell one of the doctors, Drayton Doherty was his name, he told him about this hex from the witch doctor in the graveyard. Doherty thought long and hard. The next morning, he called Vander's family to the bedside. He told them that the previous night he had lured the witch doctor back to the cemetery, where he had choked him against a tree until he explained how the curse worked. The medicine man had, he said, rubbed lizard eggs on Vander's stomach, which had hatched inside his body. One reptile remained, which was eating Vander's from the inside out. Doherty then summoned a nurse who had, by prior arrangement, filled a large syringe with a powerful emetic. An emetic is something that makes you vomit, regurgitate. With great ceremony, he inspected the instrument and he injected its contents into Vander's arms. A few minutes later, Vander's began to gag and he was regurgitating uncontrollably. In the midst of all that, unnoticed by everyone in the room, Doherty produced his piece de resistance, a green lizard he had stashed in his black bag. "Look at what came out of you, Vance," he cried. "The magic curse is lifted." Vanders did a double take, lurched backwards on the head of the bed, then drifted into a deep sleep. When he woke the next day, he was alert and ravenous. He quickly regained his strength and was discharged a week later. The facts of this case almost 80 years ago were corroborated by four medical professionals. Perhaps the most remarkable thing about it was that Vander survived. And there are numerous documented instances from many parts of the globe of people dying after being cursed. How does that work? What's the word for it, Stephanie? Nocebo. The nocebo effect. The nocebo effect, you know the placebo effect? The placebo effect is a simple one. Somebody gives you something, they say, this is good for you. You take it and you feel better. 99% of the stuff that we take is meaningless. You know, but somebody tells you it's going to do you good, and you take it, and you feel better. Why? Because you're doing good for yourself. Right? Because you have some intention, and it makes you feel better about yourself. The placebo effect is that the thing itself is kind of meaningless, but it has an effect on you. A nocebo means, which nocebo, the word means I will harm. The phenomenon has been less studied, but it means people will feel worse if they believe that they're going to get worse. What do we know suggests the impact of nocebo is far-reaching death? Now, I know somebody who's got a certain disorder, right? He's got this disorder, and he keeps it's like it's a growing thing. You know, he's got a disease, but it's kind of benign. But every time he reads about it and he goes to the doctors say to him, "Oh, yeah. That's the disease. You're going towards the later stages of the disease." And if he were to listen to all the doctors, this guy would just be getting sicker and sicker and then going to the doctors and they'd be saying, "Oh, yeah, this is the disease." It's like as you get older, you know, if you get a little depressed, you go to a doctor and the doctor says, "Oh, yeah, this is old age. This is what happens when you get older, you get depressed." You begin to believe what you're being told, and if a negative is being told to you, you actually believe the negative. It's a nocebo effect. If you believe something has happened to you in the negative, you could follow it. What does that have to do with what we're talking about? It has to do with the fact that there are different things that different people go through, some of which may be real and some of them may not be real. Some of them are culturally bound. Like, let me give you an example of one or two. Here's one called Buffet Delirant. Now, this one I'm familiar with. It comes from Haiti. It's a sudden outburst of agitated and aggressive behavior, marked confusion, psychomotor excitement, with visual and auditory hallucinations and paranoid ideation. Now, many of you have seen this in the so-called, I put quotes around, voodoo ceremonies, where you see somebody going through these things, buffet delirant, as in delirious. Now, that thing that a person goes through for that moment looks like a psychotic episode. Looks like the person should be hospitalized. Give them 5 minutes. They'll be better. Here's another one that is really amazing called great brain fag. Yeah, brain fag. Term used in West India to refer to a condition experienced by high school or university students in response to the challenges of schooling. Symptoms include difficulties in concentrating, remembering, and thinking. Students often state that their brains are fatigued and that additional somatic symptoms usually have blurring of vision, heat, brain tiredness from too much thinking. Of course, your brain doesn't get tired from too much thinking. But if you believe it, and those parts of Africa, they actually believe it, they're told they have brain fag. That's what the problem is. Here's another I like called Dahat, D-H-A-T. It's a folk diagnostic term used in India to refer to severe anxiety and hypochondriacal concerns associated with the discharge of semen. Get this. Whatever you think, whatever happens when there's semen discharge, you get very anxious and you believe you're going to be getting sick. There's another one that I like called the Qigong. Psychotic reaction. Yep. You think Qigong is a very good practice? Be careful. There's a term describing an acute, time-limited, episodic characterized by dissociative, paranoid, or other psychotic or non-psychotic symptoms that may occur in specifically involved in Qigong. What a funny thing. And people who become overly involved in the practice of Qigong, they become very vulnerable to this kind of small psychotic break. So these kind of things. Now, they're all strange. It's all unusual. What about religious dedication? What about that? When somebody is a devout anything, you know, oops, I see that. Look, devout anything in religion. Yeah. If you're a devout, and you go to church every morning, and you pray every afternoon, and you pray every evening, and you explain everything through religion, is that normal? Well, of course it's normal, because so many people do it. See, norm. It fits the norm. If you have how many million Catholics who do this praying, and how many million Protestants who do their kind of praying, and how many Buddhists who do their kind of praying, you know? Dedication to a religion, fanatical dedication to a religion. Even some of these odd things, you know, any of the small religious practices that people do that could lead to violence and stuff like that. But that's all looks normal. Because what's wrong with a person having a religious practice? You in your life have heard people say things. And you've had questions. You've had people in your life who have said strange, unusual things, and you didn't pay attention to it at the beginning, but a little later, it came back to you and you asked yourself, why, what was that thing going on that I didn't pay attention to? What was that, what do you think of that little symptom? So part of what my job becomes is to try to explain everything as pathological or normal, no matter what it is. If somebody comes to me and says, I don't want to ever be in debt, Why, there's a good thing, right? I say, ah, that's a good thing. But it's just another extreme statement that makes me want to question, what do you mean by that? If we could learn to ask each other more details without judgment, if we could learn to elicit from people the kind of information that would give us more information, then we would all benefit and we'd all get a little closer and understand each other. But the problem is, if you hear something you don't like, you begin to judge immediately. You begin to question in such a way that the person doesn't want to tell you the truth. If you want to say to them, you know, something like, what do you mean you go to church every day? Right? That's it. They're going to close up. But if you would ask somebody, well, what's it like to go to church every day? What's it do for you? You're going to learn about them, about the way they are. And maybe they are bonkers, and maybe they're not. But it's how you ask and how you listen that makes the difference. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. We're going to be taking your phone calls later today at 212-209-2900. Now, of course, what I'm saying is my job is I'm a detective. My job is people come to me and they say to me, I am disturbed by this part of my life. Can you help me figure out what it is and what's wrong? But it doesn't always mean that something is wrong. Let's look at some of the other cultures for a moment. Here's one called the ghost sickness. The ghost sickness is a preoccupation with death and the deceased, frequently observed among members of many Native American tribes. The various symptoms can be attributed to ghost sickness, including bad dreams, weakness, feelings of danger, loss of appetite, and a sense of suffocation. What you listen to when you hear people obsessed with people who are dead, you listen for things like that suffocation syndrome. Or Koro from Malaysia, refers to an episode of sudden and intense anxiety. And this is an anxiety that your genitals are going to fall off. You're afraid they're not going to fall off, they're going to recede into your body and cause death. Now, this is such a crazy thing, isn't it? But if you think about it, our genitals do recede into our body. So it's not so far-fetched. They do when you're under threat. You know, when there's something wrong, a man's testicles raise in his scrotum when he's in danger. You know, your body pulls back, you know, when it feels that it's either in danger or it needs safety. But in Malaysia, there's an obsession about this that it won't stop. That once it pulls back, it becomes... it's going to lead you to death. Now, this thing became an epidemic in Malaysia, and it was found that so many people had this fear that they couldn't even exist. Now, what makes a fear or what makes something be dangerous? There's a simple answer to it, my friends. It is if the symptom, the thing that you have or the belief that you have prevents you from having a normal relationship with somebody else. Work that is productive, that makes you keep going if you need to keep going. Or is a danger to your physical well-being. So let's say you have a hand-washing thing and people say, oh, I like to be clean, I got to wash my hands. But you have a real obsessive compulsive disorder where you must wash your hands every minute. You're afraid to shake anyone else's hands. You won't touch a doorknob, those kind of things. So that kind of thing, does it get in your way? Well, yes, you can't work anywhere. You can't have relationships with anyone. You know, you're always afraid of the disease. You're always afraid that something is going to happen to you. And it'll even stop you from eating appropriate foods, and it will challenge your physical health. So the real question about almost every symptom that somebody has, no matter what symptom you have, you could live with your symptoms. You could be just your own kind of person. But when it threatens your relationships, your ability to have a relationship, or your ability to work or your ability to maintain, not just maintain health, because you could be fat if you want to be fat, skinny if you want to be skinny. That's you. You could even be out of control, and you could be too thin or too heavy and be a little out of control. Still doesn't make you, you know, it doesn't make you bonkers. It doesn't. The thing that really works is when it stops you from working, from being with someone else and loving, or from taking care of yourself in the long run. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. I'm going to take your calls in just a minute, but here's an interesting announcement for you. Next week, we've lined up. This is kind of amazing because I visited the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota, and I found what the work that they were doing is remarkable. President Obama just recently said that if he had a model of medicine, the way it would take place, it would be as the Mayo Clinic. Now, I just can't tell you about the Mayo Clinic system. If you were to go there, it's a little bit of a haven. It's a mecca of medicine. It's like, how do they do it like this? Everybody in communication with everybody else, all politeness the whole way. Everything is nice and wonderful. There's a lot of waiting. Sometimes you have to wait for hours at a time to get to do something you need to do, but this is all you're doing. You're not there working during your days. You go there to the Mayo Clinic and you're hanging out for days at a time. But medicine is thorough, and it's really thorough, and it's kind of amazing and interesting. Everything from nutrition to holistic health to medicine and surgery, they do it all. So we were able to get on Tuesday, one of the directors of the Mayo Clinic will be on air with us talking about the management of the Mayo Clinic and how the Mayo Clinic exists. And it may give us lessons for our own lives, which I'm hoping it will. Then on Wednesday, following that, we're going to be talking again with Sherry Siegel, the neurologist. Dr. Sherry Siegel is going to be talking to us about pain management. And more about managing pain, which is kind of interesting from both a holistic and a neurological point of view. So we have these coming up next week, and it's an exciting series of programs starting on Tuesday and Wednesday. And we're going to be taking your calls as soon as we get back. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. Of course, there's obvious things. If people say to you things like, my closest relatives have been replaced by imposters. It's a common thing that people believe. They may not admit it, but they believe it. Some people believe they're being followed by people because, and the people are unrecognizable because the people are in disguise. A person I know has died, is nevertheless in the hospital ward today. This was one of the cases of Sigmund Freud's called the Rat Man, who talked about somebody, his father had died, but he thought his father was still in the hospital. Someone else is trying to control my actions through either food or through radio or something like that. Someone else's thoughts are being inserted into my mind, and sometimes it's even happening with my toothbrush. So these are, of course, very strange thoughts, indicating that there's some kind of underlying disturbance. But more common sentences that people say, like, I've never had sex in my life. I'm a 45-year-old man. I've never had sex. That sounds almost okay. Sounds like a choice. But is it? And there's where the questioning comes in. And this is where your learning to ask your questions makes all the difference in the world. We'll be back with you in a couple of minutes, my friend. Play a little music and then come back.
Great.
My grandma and your grandma were sitting by the fire. My grandma told your grandma, I'm gonna set your flag on fire. Talking about hey now,
hey now,
hey now, Aka Aka Unde, Giacomo Fino Anane, Giacomo Finane. $5 that you feel you did, Giacomo Finale.
That's Eco Eco by Zydeco Dependence. So Zydeco, huh? Just because we have to play a little edge music around here, because I've been reminded that I've been defaulting to jazz recently just a little too much. So here we have for you, my friends, Zydeco Dependence doing Eco Eco, Ico Ico. This is Armand DeMille with you at the Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM. 212-209-2900. Things all over the are happening all over. Good stuff, good stuff. Listen, my friends. Feedback. You know, everybody is so used to writing email. It's so simple. You forget the power of a letter. When you write a letter and it's in print, you realize it goes from place to place. It exists. Now, of course, there's one disadvantage of writing a letter, because when you write a letter, it becomes, you're using some of nature's trees. You're using paper. But when you write email, somebody prints it, it's the same thing, so it's not much of a difference. But I say write letters. And I say write letters when you like something. I don't care who you're dealing with. If you're dealing with some company, an organization, or somebody, and you want to do something for somebody who you care about, write a letter. Write a letter of commendation. And be careful. If you put out something nasty in a letter, that letter could last a very, very long time. It could appear in somebody's file forever. But if you say something nice about a person, it winds up in their file as well. So one person who serves you well, who does something nice for you, find a way to say to whoever it is that you're grateful to the organization, if it's a banker who's nice to you, if it's somebody who's working in a luncheonette who cares, who shows caring, write the letter. Invest the stamp. Put the letter and have it go through the post office, because when it arrives and it's opened, it becomes a part of history nowadays. People rarely throw it away. I get letters from people. And I love receiving the letters. The emails I get, but email is so different because everybody's being efficient. Text messaging, for some reason, I really can't respond to text, because the text always feels a little too cold. I don't know why. There's something about the thumb part of it that leaves the brain out or the heart out. I'm not sure, but I'm not judging it. I'm just saying it doesn't work for me. So I would recommend making sure you could use this wonderful thing we have called ink and putting it to a page and writing a letter to somebody and signing your name and or writing a letter about somebody makes all the difference in the world. Helps keep the good stuff going, friends. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon. I am fine. Who are you?
You sound great. Sorry about that. I wish I had a... what's that button you guys have in radio? The cough switch?
So oh, yes.
You don't hear me?
How do you know about that?
Anyway...
How do you know about cough switches?
I've been a radiophile for years, and sometimes if you're listening to a show, you hear that blip of silence.
Have you ever been on a radio? Have you ever been...
Yeah, I've been on the radio a couple of times over the years.
Just talked on it? But have you ever actually been a radio guest?
A radio guest a couple of times.
Yeah, I hear it. You're reluctant to talk about it, I hear.
It was just nothing special, really.
Well, tell me about it. Tell me a little.
I was drawn to call because I was fascinated.
No, but tell me about your radio history. Tell me a tiny bit about when you were a guest on the radio.
Oh, I was interviewed years ago because of a hobby of mine.
Which is what?
Which is burping and farting on the radio.
Oh, darn it. So you can't say those words on the radio.
Let's move on.
Yeah. See, I knew that that was kind of one of those things that would come in our way, which is why I opened it, because I didn't want that to happen, Michael. Thank you. 212-209-2900, Armand DeMille. So there it is, my friends. Listening with the special ear. You see, he said, cough button. And I said, it's got to be something to it. And there we were. And that's what I'm trying to teach you. 212-209-2900. Let's get another caller. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air.
Just hung up. Just hung up.
212-209-2900. So just let you hear one more story, by the way. We were talking about nocebo, the nocebo effect. Sam Schumann was diagnosed with end-stage liver cancer in the 1970s and was given just months to live. Schumann, he duly died in the allotted time frame, yet the autopsy revealed that his doctors had got it wrong. The tumor was tiny and it didn't spread. So he didn't die from cancer, but he died in believing he was dying from cancer.
Ready.
212-209-2900. Let's take your call. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air.
Hi, Armand. This is Tony Maiulo.
Hey, Tony. How nice to hear your voice.
Thank you, Armand. I'm on the outer fringes of the WBAI reception. I'm in White House, New Jersey, on my way to Pittsburgh to the Andy Warhol Museum.
Uh-huh.
Just a little break for a couple of days. You want to tell me again what you want us to call in for. Tell me what you want me to do. Tell me what the conversation
Tony,
is about.
Tony, the real truth of it is that you would love to call in and say hello to me. Right? You don't care what we're really talking about, but just to be on the air with me today, you want to be on the air just to say hello, don't you?
It's exciting to be on the air with you, Armand.
But isn't it nice? I mean, so we don't really care what the subject is, do we?
No.
It's just nice to be on the air. I saw you just a couple of weeks ago.
At the Open Center.
At the Open Center. What did you think of that?
You helped.
What?
I loved it. You got me to push myself. I don't dance, Armand, and I didn't have to push hard to make myself dance. I was standing relaxed in a room with other people standing relaxed, and I let myself move. I never dance, but you got me to move and try to dance. That pushed me in a way I needed to be pushed.
It's a wonderful thing.
It was. It was wonderful for me, Armand. I enjoyed seeing you again.
Yeah, I've seen you a number of years, Tony, and it's always good to see your face. So thank you for calling in.
Thank you, Armand.
Thanks so much. Right. Bye-bye. 212-209-2900. Now, wait, before we go to our caller, so let's stick with this Schumann's phenomenon here. Patients who suffer harmful side effects, for example, chemotherapy, somebody gets chemotherapy, they suspect the chemotherapy is going to make them nauseous. They get nauseous before they get the chemo. And now they have a sympathetic nocebo effect. Somebody in the family gets nauseous when they hear the person's taking the chemo. So what this suggests is that things are, our minds are very fragile. And if you think about it, you know, if you think about somebody who, it's just fragile. Be careful what you say to people. You know, they have this other phenomenon about husbands and wives in hospitals. If somebody's in a hospital and they're sick, generally the doctors and the nurses don't like to have the husbands and wives there. Because the husbands and wives are focusing on the person's illness all the time. So when the person says things like, I'm in pain, the husband or wife is rushing outside and saying, you got to take care of this pain, you got to take care of this pain. What would be better for the patient would be if they sat through the pain without taking some kind of a major painkiller, because the major painkiller is going to inhibit their healing process. You know, opiates do that. They stop your healing process. Demerol or opium or any of the derivatives, they all kind of say to your body, you're as good as dead. They take away your own painkilling things. So they limit how much painkiller they're going to give you in hospitals, believe me, for your benefit. And so when you have somebody running around all the time saying, take care of them, they're crying, it actually hurts them because the nurses respond to the demands of the mates. And it makes the person actually sicker. Leave the person alone in the room, very often they get better just because they're on their own. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello there.
Hi, Armand. It's Ellie. How are you?
Hello, Ellie.
You were talking about how you can tell when someone is a little bit unusual and you better watch out for them or whatever. The things that they say, well, I went out to dinner with somebody for the first time, and he seemed like a very nice man, and then he suggested that I go back to his apartment with him. And I said, you know, I don't really know you well enough to do that. I think we should go out for a while and see what happens, and then, you know, at some later time. But I don't really know you that well. The first time we ever went out, he got so angry and said, what's the matter with you? You don't trust me, and all this kind of stuff. I said, that's not the point. I feel that since this is the first time we've gone out, I don't feel it's time for me to be going to your apartment. And then when he got so angry, I knew I was right. I knew there was something, you know, I wasn't sure what it was, but something made me a little nervous. So then I walked away and happily walked away.
Smart you.
You know, so.
Smart you, except, now tell me, so what did you anticipate? What did you learn from that? You learned, you know, this guy's an angry guy.
Right.
And had I gone up to his apartment, tell me the rest of your scenario in your mind. Make it
if
up.
I had not. Slept with him, he would have been very angry and
might have become violent.
He could have become violent, yeah.
Okay, and if I had slept with him?
Well, I wouldn't have on the first time we went out, so that wouldn't have happened.
Okay, but if I did?
He probably wouldn't have been, wouldn't have been any good, probably.
Because?
Because he wouldn't have been a very sensitive, caring person.
Okay, so now, imagine you as somebody who didn't like sensitive, caring people. Imagine you as somebody who didn't like people who were nice to you.
Right.
But you like people who are nasty.
Right.
Because you wanted to be treated that way. Well, of course, you'd pick up unconsciously on the anger of the person, and you would then want to go to their room.
Right.
So his racket works.
Oh, okay.
You know, it works. It doesn't stop things because there are just as many people who will see his aggression and be attracted to it.
That's interesting.
Isn't that interesting?
Well, maybe there's some people that want to be a little bit scared. They want to scare.
That's right. And the scare and the fear kind of excitement. I was watching a movie called Three Boys from Brooklyn because I knew somebody who was in it. And there was one woman who was talking to one of the guys from Brooklyn. She was from Columbia University. And she said, you know, there's something about the edge that is so attractive to me. If you just have an edge, it turns me on. Mm. If I don't have the edge, I don't get turned on. So sometimes the chemistry gets dependent on it. You were taking care of yourself. Have there been times in your life when you didn't take care of yourself so well?
Oh, yes. Yes, when I was younger, back in the 70s.
Back in the 70s when?
When I wasn't taking good care of myself.
You know, were there any great consequences?
Yes.
What were the consequences?
Some violence and episodes of drinking and other things like that.
Any permanent damage?
Probably not. I mean, well, no, I don't know how to say that. I'm not sure if I can answer that question. I don't know if I can answer that question.
Because? Because you're not sure.
Right. I mean, I think I had some bad habits and I broke away from those bad habits and now I'm doing better.
It's really amazing, you know, if you look back on it and you think about it, you could almost applaud yourself for having come through that to where you are now. You know, but you wish you hadn't had to suffer the pain.
Right.
You know?
I wish I'd done things differently, but, you know, that's how you learn. I broke away from all the good rules that my parents taught me, and I did other things. But now I'm more careful. And I'm now a middle-aged person. So.
But now you're your own parent.
Exactly.
Exactly. Thanks for calling in.
Thanks, Omar. You have a great show.
Thank you. Bye-bye. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi there, you're on the air. Hello there.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Armand. My name is Mena.
Hello, Mena.
And I'm so happy to hear and speak with you.
Have you been listening for many years?
I just wanted to let you know that I very much enjoy your show, and I love listening to the advice you give and your healing words that you give everybody. I'm a pediatric nurse.
I was going to say, boy, you serve people. I could tell. I could tell you're somebody who loves people a lot.
I do. And I just wanted to let you know that with what you're saying regards to, you know, the taboos or the belief systems that everybody has, a lot has to do with your religion, your belief systems and all that. But in the end, I think if people actually just listen to themselves and their bodies, they can heal themselves and they can basically empower themselves into not necessarily succumbing to things that are not necessarily true, like you said.
Well, yeah, but at one point, Mina, didn't you believe in things that weren't from the inside of you?
Yes.
And what was it?
And that's exactly why I'm saying it.
What was that? Tell me a little about your experience. Tell me what you believed.
Well, I come from Mexico,
mm-hmm.
and from a very small town, and there's a lot of tradition, especially being a Catholic, or at one time being a Catholic. So there's a lot of belief systems that were not necessarily, you know, how could I say it? not necessarily the most helpful, especially uh-huh. when it came to being sick.
Such as?
Know? Well, giving all your power to the medical doctors,
mm-hmm.
you know. A lot of what comes in healing has to do with looking inside yourself and pulling that out and empowering yourself. And
so what
no.
you believed at one point, you grew up in a culture where they empowered the authorities with the ability to do the healing. And you're going to tell me that at one point you were part of that belief system. And at one point you thought, well, if I want to become part of the healing world, I'm going to have to become part of the world of people who help people by healing them, right?
Correct.
Right? But then you changed your mind.
A little bit, yes. I think there's a balance between, you know, I have a lot of respect to the medical field and medicine. There is a part for it. But there's also, you know, the spiritual part of the human being, and that you can also help yourself.
Mina, it must be wonderful. So what is it, babies all day long? You're with babies? Children?
Children.
How old?
From newborn to 18-year-old.
Wow. And what's that like?
Beautiful.
Tell me what you mean by beautiful.
You know, you can actually impact somebody's life tremendously just by what you say.
Every moment of that medical experience,
exactly.
You have more of an opportunity to make an impression on this child in a kind way
exactly.
when they're in pain or when something's wrong.
Exactly.
They got parents around them who were worried. They got doctors telling them what's wrong. And they got you, Mina, the pediatric nurse from Mexico, who has the art and the skill and the love to touch them like they've never been touched.
I hope so. I'm hoping that's the case, yes.
Yeah, how nice. Thank you so much, Minna.
Thank you. I also have a question for you regarding therapy. I've been meaning to call your office, and I don't know have a way to for couple therapy.
Well, you can go, if you want to find out, I could recommend different couples therapies to you. Go to my website, thepositivemind.com,
mm-hmm.
and you'll find all the contact information there.
Okay, thank you so much.
Okay, Minna. 212-209-2900. I wonder if there's time for one more call. Let's get one more in there. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air.
Hi, Armand.
Hello.
How are you? It's Alex.
Hello, Alex.
Yeah, well, short for Alexandria.
Hello, Alexandria. Alex.
I'm good. Actually, the reason why I was calling, something you said resonated with me, and it was about the mother whose children don't speak to her.
Yes.
Yeah, and I stopped speaking to my mother, and sometimes I feel guilty or sometimes I miss that connection when I see other people talking about their moms or having a relationship with her.
Oh, I know what you mean, yes.
I think I'm in a healthier and happier place because I don't speak with her.
Probably true. You know, Alex, it's probably true that for now you got to take this distance. And your mom probably is somebody who's a little whacked. She get very angry.
She's kind of like, I would say, almost passive, but she'll just kind of, she's demanding, and we're still in that parent-child role.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, I'm in my 40s, so.
So if you don't give her what she wants, if you don't behave the way she wants you to.
Yeah, and I'm like, you know, just meet me halfway. That's all I ask. I want to.
Yeah.
Have a relationship with you as equals.
Well,
you know,
Alex, for as long as you have to do it, you do it. You keep that distance.
Right.
You know, sometimes there's a lot of evidence that good friends are better than parents, you know, because of the way parents are. But in fact, there was a recent article about that in Scientific American. There's and I'm going to say to you that at one point it's going to shift. Your mom is going to try to get together with you, and you're going to get together with your mom. And at one point, your mom will change. Her metabolism will change.
Mm-hmm.
She will find the value in healing this. You know, the other thing you could do, and I've seen people do this, grab your mom and say, let's go to couples counseling, where we get an arbitrator in the middle, and we talk about this and fix it. That's the other answer.
Hmm.
Interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
But if you find that inside you there's an impulse that pushes you away from this right now, then that means you're not ready. When you're ready, that may be another answer.
Okay.
All right. Well, I want to thank you for calling in.
Thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure. We have to get going. This is Armand DeMille. We will be back with you Tuesday at 1 p.m. If you want to go to the website, it's thepositivemind.com. And don't forget WBAI.org. Always room for another donation to the radio station, my friends.
Talk back. is your gathering place for the free and fair exchange of information and ideas, heard here Monday through Thursday from 3 until 5 in the afternoon. I'm Hugh Hamilton.